You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. It is the first weekend of Game Fair 2026. I hope everybody is going to get out there. We've got a big interview scheduled for Saturday the 8th with gubernatorial candidate Amy Klobuchar. Ron Husfeldt and Ron Scherer will be conducting that interview. I hope to have a transcript of that interview in this coming week's edition of Outdoor News. Next weekend at Game Fair, hoping to get the Republican candidate and conduct an interview with those folks. But Game Fair, great fun every year, and I hope a lot of folks get out there. A good chunk of this show is going to be dedicated to a two-part interview, exit interview, you might call it, with Brad Parsons. He is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Section Chief. He's retiring in September, and he has graciously given me a fair amount of time to talk to him today about his career and how he foresees the future of fisheries management in the state. Before Brad joins us, however, let's kick off the show with our old friend Tim Lesmeister. Tim, welcome. Good to see you again. Thanks for joining me.
Good to be here.
Lots of content in this most recent edition of Outdoor News. You had a column on what three words this app that you absolutely swear by. If you want to be found, if you're lost and you want to contact someone and tell them where you are, you think you can't go wrong with this what three words app, huh?
I love this app. I discovered it a little over a year ago when I was over in England. They use it a lot over in England. It was designed by these three English guys. And, you know, there's no addresses over in England. I mean, it's really hard to find places over there. So all your delivery companies now use What Three Words. It's an app. And what they did was they took and broke the entire world up into 3 meter squares. So that's about 9 by 9 foot square increments. And each one of those increments is designated by three words. And if you open the app, you can see right where you're standing and you can see right what those three words are. And you can pass that information on to somebody and they'll know exactly where you're located.
So they're fairly young guys. What did they have, a delivery business or something? And they were completely frustrated by trying to describe to their delivered drivers where to drop things off, something like that. And so they just decided they did this on their own. They didn't get the permission from any government. They divided the whole world up into 3 by 3 squares.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the beautiful thing. You don't need to be, you know, you can be on water, you can be in the woods, you can be just about anywhere. And there is a little tiny square increment that designates where you are. Now, your phone, almost all these smartphones these days are GPS. And so it literally will tell you exactly where you are on any given part of the earth with just three words.
So when you first told me about this, I was confused. I thought, well, I can enter three words that are relative to where I am and it'll get me there. It's like, no. The app already has designated every one of these squares with three words.
Right.
So you open up the app, if you've enabled it so it can identify your location, like you said, through GPS, as soon as you open it up, at the bottom, it's going to list the three words for the section where you are sitting. I see it right now on mine. So the point is, if I'm lost and I can contact somebody with this app, I just tell them the three words that designate where I am. They plug it in. Boom. They'll know right where I am.
They'll know exactly where you are. And here's how good this is. My son, I'm up in Alaska last year. This was last fall after I got back from England, and he's going camping. And I said, Jason, I'll join you tomorrow. Just tell me how to get there. And he starts rattling off these directions. And I said, oh, no, Jason, I'll tell you what. When you get there, just text me what three words. And I had him download the app. He drove to this place. He had one bar on his phone in this campground, which was in the middle of nowhere, very obscure location. And he texted me those three words. And the next day, I literally drove using the map. Using the navigation, it was Apple Maps, but going through the What Three Words app, I drove right to his tent. That's how accurate this is. My son was out on his lake in a pontoon when I got to his cabin. I called him on the phone and I said, give me What Three Words and I'll come out to you. So he's in his pontoon. I jumped in his fishing boat. He gave me What Three Words. I used the map, the What Three Words app map, and I literally drove right to him, right to his pontoon on this lake. He would have never been able to describe to me where he was. I'm camping in Yellow River Forest just a few weeks ago. My grandson is going to drive down a day after I get there, and there's no address there. It's literally an obscure location down in Yellow River Forest. I gave him What Three Words, and the next day he drove literally right to my camper. That's how accurate this is. What Three Words app. It is incredible.
At the bottom of the screen where it shows your location, there's a share button. So it's very easy just to hit that share button and let someone else know where you are. So, Tim, let's say there's some location that I intend to go to, who knows what, camping, fishing, whatever, and I want to use this app to get me there. Do I find it on the app, just try to zoom in using the map and then determine what the three words are and then plug it in? You understand what I'm saying? How do I find something if there's no one already there using this app?
I've done this before, and it works very, very well. We've got a friend that lives down on Bone Lake. It's in Wisconsin, right on the other side of the Minnesota border. And they literally show the houses around the lake on this app. And I know what shape his house is, and I've been there before, but it's very difficult to find this guy's place. And I just zoomed in on the map till I located his house on the shoreline. I clicked on his driveway. It gave me What Three Words. I plugged it in to Apple Maps and literally drove right to his driveway. You can do that if for somebody in the Boundary Waters. Let's say you're camping near the Narrows on Basswood Lake. There's a campsite. We call it Tall Pines. You can actually literally zoom in on that spot on the Maps and What Three Words app and click right there on a square within that little campsite, because there'll be about probably 15 squares that are in that campsite. Just click on one and just poke in those three words into a... You can actually use a compass, too. There's a compass as part of that app. So if you're somewhere that there are no roads, don't worry about it. Just use the compass. It'll lead you right there. Although they will actually, on their map, draw a line as well. So you can go anywhere you want to go with What Three Words. Now, here's an interesting thing. A friend of mine's got a place here on Madeline Island, and he's always... dropping you a pin. I think it's a Google thing. I'll drop you a pin.
Right.
And every time you drop somebody a pin, they always end up at this guy's house that's about a block and a half away. And this, I actually knocked on this guy's door the first time, and he chewed me out. He says, everybody keeps coming here and knocking the door and asking for Christopher. He lives over there. And he points at the house. And I told Christopher, use What Three Words. And now that he's done that, he's literally getting people right to his porch door.
The app is free, right? Doesn't cost anything.
Right.
Tim, I don't know, about 6-7 years ago, I crashed my bike, broke my collarbone, and my wife had to come get me. I didn't have my phone with me, but if I had, I could have just pinged her the three words and she could have driven right up to me, because someone came by with a cell phone and I had to describe how to get there. And even though I was like 2 miles from our house, it was mass confusion trying to explain to my wife, where to turn right, where to turn left, that sort of thing, especially when I'm laying there breathing in pain.
Shortly after I got this app, I read about this woman out in the Sierra Nevadas that was lost for 3 weeks. And I thought to myself, and she had her cell phone, and she was able to locate a coffee shop, but it was 18 miles away. If she would have had What Three Words, all she would have had to do is send her location to somebody. Could have been anybody, with a note that said, hey, send somebody to rescue me. And they would have known exactly where she was. Now, what's interesting now these days is that most of these phones, the latest cell phones, even if you don't have cell service, they'll SOS through satellite, and you can deliver a text message with what three words on it. And the people tell me, well, why don't you use GPS coordinates, the longitude and the latitude? Let me tell you something. What three words is a lot simpler.
Yeah, they're just a few, they're three simple words, and they're completely random. I mean, it's like activism, exist, you know, whatever are the three words maybe for that 3-foot quadrant. So they did this worldwide using all these real simple words. Clearly, they used AI or some sort of, you know, random system to generate this. They didn't, you know, come up with the three words themselves sitting around a campfire. But, I think I'm a believer, Tim. It's pretty darn handy. And I'm going to insist my wife load this up. How are these guys making money with it, I wonder? Like, say it's free. I don't see any ads on it. I guess they're just swell guys helping everyone out, huh?
No, you can buy into this and get, you know, let's say you want to use Waze, which is a mapping, GPS mapping. You have to buy a subscription. Let's say that you're a delivery service and you want to use this. Most all the delivery services now and all the emergency services are paying for the upgraded version. So these guys are probably making a little money on it. I don't think they're getting rich, but I'm telling you right now that I hope this thing goes forever because I use it a lot.
The simple version is a free download, right? That's what I'm playing around with on my phone. Well, and neither Tim or I are on the payroll for this.
That's true.
Something he wrote a column about, and I think it's interesting, worth sharing. It might save someone's life out there. So I'm going to make sure my lovely bride downloads it. Tim, you'll swing back at the end of the show?
You bet.
All right, we're going to grab a break right now, return and talk with Brad Parsons, the retiring DNR fisheries chief, when we return here on Outdoor News Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Melissa Bachman from Winchester Deadly Passion, and I'm excited to invite you to my Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. This year, I'm going to be making 10 stops across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. Join me for a seminar packed with proven deer hunting tactics like rattling, decoying, and even a live Q&A where you can ask anything. Every attendee will be entered to win an incredible prize package worth over $1,000. Visit melissabachman.com for tour dates, locations, and more details.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Elevate your tactical readiness with the Retay USA lineup, where precision meets performance. Build your skills with the RXP-22 handgun and the RA-15-22 rifle and pistol. When the mission demands full power reliability, turn to the 724 Patrol. Powered by Retay's patented Inertia Plus system, this combat-proven 12-gauge shotgun offers ultra-fast cycling, total modularity, and optics-ready performance. Experience the full tactical edge at RetayUSA.com.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports, trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try it free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken's Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com. Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline here with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. I want to jump right in with our next guest. It's a two-segment interview with a gentleman I've known for many years. He is retiring from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources in early September. His name is Brad Parsons. He's been the Fisheries Section Chief at the DNR since 2018, and I thought we'd get him in for an exit interview. Brad, thanks so much for joining me. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Absolutely, Rob. Happy to talk fish anytime with anybody.
So you've been with the DNR, is it 39 years and the last eight as the fisheries section manager?
Yeah, actually I'll hit 40 years here in a couple of weeks before I retire. Right. But yeah, I started as a research scientist back in Waterville, actually, in 1986.
Great run with one agency. Let's go back even further. Where were you from originally, Brad? I know you went to UW-Stevens Point for your undergrad, but tell us about your early days as a young angler.
Yeah, well, I grew up in southeast Wisconsin, actually on a small, beautiful lake there, and that's where I kind of learned to fish, primarily shore fishing. I lived there till I was about 11, then moved to Peoria, Illinois, and did some fishing on the Illinois River. We used to fish, my friends and I, we'd fish the strip mines. One of our friends, his dad worked out there, and so got onto some bass fishing then, and then went to college at Point after high school.
You ever fished the Rock River while you were in southeast Wisconsin? I lived in southeast Wisconsin for a few years in the late 70s. I never did the Winnebago thing. I don't know. Any experience with some of those Wisconsin fisheries?
I have. As a matter of fact, I just got back from a charter trip out on Lake Michigan. And,
there you go.
When I went back to college at Point, the Wisconsin River area with the walleye fishing there below the Dubay Dam, and we would take weekend trips and go up and fish, trout or smallmouth in a river somewhere. It was almost never in a boat.
So why did you decide to major in fisheries at Stevens Point? And then later you got a graduate degree at University of Wyoming. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's right. I started out, I love the outdoors and I loved animals and fish and thought about working as a marine biologist, the kind of charismatic megafauna of sharks and stuff. But I realized I was a Midwest kid and I really wanted to live here. And then somewhere along the line, realized that I could have a career in this. I think we were actually fishing in a backwater of the Illinois River and Illinois DNR showed up, honestly. And that was kind of it. And then it was Stevens Point and out to Wyoming. And Wyoming was a great experience, primarily being a Midwest kid and natural lakes and going out there. I worked on Flame Gorge Reservoir, which is a really cool place on the Wyoming, Utah border. But when I was done with grad school, I really wanted to come back to the Midwest and fortunate that Minnesota was hiring.
Now you held a number of different jobs with the Minnesota DNR. Can you kind of run through those with us quick? And I know research in particular was an important part of your career earlier before the section chief manager post.
Yeah. Well, hired in Waterville as, we called him assistant biologist back then. And I was only really there for about a year. And then Don Pereira, who actually preceded me in this job, was up in Glenwood as the research biologist. And he went back to get his PhD. So my boss at the time, Jack Wingate, moved me up there. And it was supposed to be for a year. And a year turned into two. And two turned into three. And three turned into about 24 years in the Glenwood area with a wife and two kids and all kinds of things. So, yeah. And then after that, I really wanted to get more into the management side of things. So I was lucky enough in 2010 to become the Central Region Manager, moved down here to St. Paul. And that was in 2010. And then 2018, when Don retired, I was fortunate enough to get this position.
I've actually gotten to know Don better in his retirement years, I think, than I did while he was a fisheries management chief. But he's done some great lakes fisheries work here since he left that DNR post.
Yeah, he was a commissioner on the Great Lakes Fishery Commission. Right. In my role, that's some of the stuff I really enjoy the most is working with other states and working with other things. The Great Lakes was really Don's thing. I've been a little more focused on some of the Mississippi River work and kind of our not only the upper miss with our neighboring states, but throughout the entire basin. And that really is one of the best things about this job, is that ability to work with people from around the country. The problems may be somewhat different, but they're all interrelated.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Jerisline. We're chatting with Brad Parsons. He's the Minnesota DNR Fisheries Section Manager. He's retiring in September after a 40-year career with the agency. We wish him luck with that, but we wanted to recap his career a little bit and talk about some big picture items with fisheries here in Minnesota. Did you have a favorite job, or maybe not a favorite job, but when you look back on your career, is there a real high point where you're like, yeah, hey, we fixed that. That's going to be better for future generations.
Yeah, the vast majority of the work I did out in Glenwood as a research scientist was primarily doing walleye stocking evaluations in various places. But we also did some work on some shallow lake stuff, where the way we rear walleyes here in the state of Minnesota in our natural ponds, we can actually improve the water quality for waterfowl in those ponds with the small walleye eating fathead minnows. It doesn't work everywhere. I'm not saying it's a panacea, but that was some really groundbreaking work that's continued on. And that was working with our wildlife research folks and with various universities. But, you know, in this job, when you're out doing the field work, that's really when you're focused, you're having the most fun. I remember I was just talking to our current research unit here a couple weeks ago. I always looked forward to going up north and helping Rod Pierce with the ice out trap netting. Rod was doing some of that groundbreaking work on Northern Pike, literally wrote the book on Northern Pike. But it was the way to kick off spring every year, was to go up north and help Rod with that. And then we would come back and do our night electrofishing. You know, you're out there till 2-3 in the morning sometime chasing young of the year walleyes around various lakes. And it really doesn't get any better when you're in this field than when you're out doing the field work.
Brad, I remember back in my journalism school days, we had a sports reporter come through one day with a large newspaper and talked about his job. And he said, you know, the one thing he maybe didn't necessarily like about it was, at the end of the day, the last thing he wanted to do was go to a baseball game or a football game, because that's all he did all week, every day, was write about professional athletes. Has that happened to you at all? Or does someone say to you, hey, Brad, let's go fishing this weekend? And you're like, yeah, you know, the last thing I want to think about is fish. Or, hey, can you not get enough fish even during your downtime?
You know, there were times when I would come home after, you know, picking gill nets all day long out in the hot sun. And my wife or the kids would say, you know, let's go out on the boat tonight. And I'm like, I don't want to be on a boat. I've been on a boat for 8 hours in the hot sun. So, yeah, there was that. And the other thing is, our jobs are interesting. People care about fishing. So I like to tell new employees that I probably did more PR work for the DNR on the golf course, at church, at parties, at bars or whatever, off the clock, than I ever did, because people love to talk about that stuff. Everybody's got a story, and they want to tell you their story. And it's fun to hear those. And yeah, there are times when you're kind of like, this is kind of the last, you know, you sit next to somebody on a plane and they ask, oh, what do you do? And you're like, oh no, do I really want to talk about Mille Lacs again or something like that?
Right,
but
right,
so it's there, but we wouldn't do this if we didn't care about it. And like I said, I can talk about fish with people anytime.
Brad, I think you've had a little more of an extroverted personality compared to some of the folks in that role over the years. And that's what's made you successful. It's one of many things that's probably made you successful in that job, because maybe you do get a little sick of talking about some of these issues all the time. But I've never seen you act that way or behave that way or respond that way to someone that's querying you about an issue that I'm sure you've heard about ad nauseum. You're very engaging, and I think that's benefited you in that role.
Well, I appreciate that, Rob. And that's really part of who I am. I mean, I've always said that, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, their own story, but we're not all entitled to our own facts. So sometimes you have to listen to the story and say, well, you know, maybe you haven't looked at it this way, or maybe there's a way to do that. But we have over 1 million licensed anglers in the state of Minnesota. There's going to be a variety of opinions. And like I said, everybody's got a fishing story. And if your story leads you one way, sometimes understanding that there's a different way to look at it isn't always easy. But I loved having those conversations. I still do. You know, the very last thing I'm ever going to be when I leave this job is, you know, some of us in this job say the dreaded XDNR biologist said this. That's not where I want to go. You know, I understand how hard these jobs are, but I also understand why people do what they do. So I try. And those interpersonal relationships, yeah, it's really fun to be out quietly picking a gillnet or quietly tagging fish somewhere. But one of the reasons I moved into the regional job and then eventually into this job was I did want to get out and tell the story of why we're doing what we're doing, what's working, and then if we're wrong, admit it, let's fix it.
Brad, before we go to break, real quick, what's your favorite fish to catch?
Boy, that is really hard. You know, when I was in Glenwood, I did a lot of bass fishing. That was kind of my favorite. Fished some tournaments with a friend of mine from out there. That was a lot of fun. You know, I love going on a Canadian walleye fishing trip with my high school buddies. But I tell you right now, last several years, my favorite trip is every spring I go down and spend a few days on the banks of the Root River with some night crawlers. And I catch 7, 8, 9 species of fish a day, you know, red horns. Oh, yeah. But it can be smallmouth. It can be brown trout. It can be whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I'm kind of at the point where I'm keeping it simple.
You never know what you're going to catch in a river. Brad, you'll stick around for another segment?
You bet.
That is Brad Parsons. He is the retiring Minnesota DNR Fisheries Section Manager. We're going to grab a break. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages. Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline with you for another segment. We're going to jump right back into our conversation with Brad Parsons. He is the retiring Minnesota Department of Natural Resources section manager for the fisheries division over there at the agency. He's retiring in September. He's joined us for a long interview here, and I appreciate him spending this time with us. He broke down some of his background in the first segment. I want to get into some more nitty-gritty details of what's cooking at DNR Fisheries these days. Fisheries division or section is what? About 280 employees.
Yeah.
Explain some misconceptions about maybe what people perceive those fisheries folks doing out there. Tell us what those DNR folks are doing afield is, you know, on a typical day.
Yeah. You know, people most often run into us if, for example, they see a krill clerk at the access, or if they're out on a boat and they see us out picking gillnets and they see a bunch of stinky fish. And if we're out there on the, you know, on a beautiful day in August, and they're like, wow, how do I get a job like this? But they don't see you in October in a sleet storm, harvesting walleyes out of a pond, or, you know, out there at 3 o'clock in the morning, even though it is a lot. Electrofishing was an absolute blast. You're still out there in the dark, and you're fighting bugs and everything like that. You know, and I think people often, it's not the most visible thing that we do. And that's it. The most visible things we do are, for example, stocking fish. And that is absolutely necessary in a lot of places. Stocking fish is about providing opportunities where they wouldn't exist otherwise.
Another aspect to the job that I think maybe a lot of folks don't understand is there's a fair amount of interstate collaboration and cooperation with states like Wisconsin, South Dakota, even probably Ontario a little bit, working on border regs and just collaborating on different aspects of fisheries management.
Yeah, there is. You talk about the border waters of Ontario, for instance. I mean, most of Lake of the Woods in Canada is a very different body of water than our folks see on the Minnesota waters. You know, there's that really deep water with lake trout, or it's much less productive than ours is. So we might have to do things very differently, but it's very important for us to be working together so that when we're sending a message that, yeah, our walleye populations are fine, if they're having an issue in one of the other parts, that they can do that. Rainy Lake, the vast majority of that lake is in Canada. Here in a couple of weeks, we're going over to our South Dakota border water meeting, and working together on Traverse and Big Stone is great. And I mentioned a little bit about the Mississippi River. Sure, it's Wisconsin. But for example, the invasive carp issue we have, those fish aren't being born in Wisconsin or Minnesota. They're being born in Illinois or even further south than that. So having that thing, and fish don't care about borders, fish are fish. So they're going to swim around. And again, that's one of the reasons I love this particular job, is because I have that opportunity to work with those folks and come to a resolution.
And yet, I presume that's something they don't teach you in fisheries management school at UW Stevens Point 40 plus years ago, right? That you're going to be working with other states. You're going to be working with sovereign nations, with our Ojibwe band partners on things like co-management.
Absolutely. And that's it. That's a joke in the natural resource field. They didn't teach me this in college. And a lot of that is the public interactions. It's even, you know, as a young biologist going out to a lake association and talking about the crappie population in Freeborn Lake. And sometimes maybe the lakeshore people, they're more interested in, you know, what can I do to get rid of my weeds? But you bring all that together. And then, yes, learning about the different perspectives that, for example, a tribal nation may have on the fishery and what it is. Again, if you ever quit learning in this job, it's when you should quit. And I've really tried hard to keep learning up to this point, and maybe now it's time to take a break.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisle. We're chatting with retiring fisheries section manager Brad Parsons. He is retiring in September, and he's graced us with a nice long interview here today. When you first announced your retirement a couple months ago in June or whatever it was, one of our reporters here interviewed you, and you said something along the lines of, you think Minnesota's got, you know, some of the best fishing in the country, if not the best. But how do we maintain that?
It's about continuing to do the work, and it's about continuing to educate people. One of the most frustrating things for fisheries, for example, fish need water. They need clean water. But the biggest driver of water quality is something we have no control over. It could be development. It could be agriculture. It could be whatever. Could be invasive species. Oftentimes, we don't have control over that. So it's continuing to do the work. It's doing the science. I mean, yes, granted, a gill net is a fairly blunt tool for looking at what's in a lake. But if you do it often enough and you do it in the right way and you interpret that data, you can get good trends of what's going on. And shameless plug, we need money to do that. You know, the licensed buyers and the people who pay the excise tax on their fishing equipment and boats, et cetera, that's what funds our work. But just as important is the quality of the water that those fish are in. About the only external money we get in our fisheries budget is from the Clean Water Fund. And that's to do IBI work or Index of Biotic Integrity, where our folks are out. We're not only collecting walleye and pike and bluegills and crappies. We're looking at the non-game fish that are in there. We're looking at the darters and the shiners and things like that. Those are ways that we can tell people that your lake is a healthy place. This lake is a healthy place because certain species and certain ratios are in there. So we need money to do that. Like you said, we're 280 people. Frankly, I got 30 vacancies right now because we can't really afford to have all 280 of those positions filled. We need money to do our work. And sad, it's kind of a shameless plug, but people argue that the North American model, which is basically hunters and anglers pay for fish and wildlife management, they say that's broken. Well, it may be broken to a certain extent, but I think it still has a real place because those are the people who are engaged. They're the ones who really care about it. And yes, we need general fund. Yes, we need clean water fund. Yes, we need Lessard Sam's money. But really having that game and fish fund as our base work is vital.
Absolutely. No, and it's not broken, but it's definitely not as robust as it was, right, you know, 20 years ago. And we need, you know, supplement it with some other sources. I want to rapid fire a few questions at you, Brad, before we let you go. One, are you satisfied with the status of walleye stocking here in the state? Do you feel like we're stocking as much as we need to? Do you think there's any gaps where we could be stocking more? It's a long time issue, walleye stocking. Are you satisfied with the current state of stocking walleyes here in Minnesota?
Yeah, in general, I am. You know, it's getting tougher, quite frankly, with the way our lakes are changing and things like that. For example, we had to stock Cass Lake with fingerlings this year. We never stocked Cass Lake with fingerlings, and that's because something is changing out there where our fry stockings aren't working. Yes, are there places we could stock more? Yes. Are there places where we've been stocking for years and maybe we should try something different? And then when lakes start changing due to either climate or invasive species, is fry stocking still going to work? Maybe we do need to go to fingerlings. It's entirely possible that 4 or 5 years from now, we're stocking more fingerlings because the fry stocking isn't working due to whatever that change might be. So we're always evaluating it. And it's an easy, visible thing to see. You put walleyes in the lake, they're going to come out. Well, you put them into a lake full of little northern pike, and they ain't coming out. They're going to feed northern pike. So it's not that simple.
The walleye limit, the DNR is basically advocating for going from 6 to 4. There was a public comment period. You had a lot of comments. The administrative law judge here instilled that has not been scheduled yet. Is that correct, Brad?
No, it hasn't been scheduled yet. And frankly, I really hoped we were going to have the question answered one way or the other before I retired. That's not going to happen. You know, that's quite frankly one of the things, if I got everything to the finish line, I wanted to get to the finish line, I'd never retire and my wife would be really, really mad at me. No, and that's exactly what I was just talking about. You can't stock your way out of certain problems, out of certain things like changing lakes, et cetera. And I talked about money. Stocking fingerlings in particular is not cheap. It's hard to do. And it's getting harder for us to do with the changing water patterns that we have in our rearing ponds, you know. Less winter kill means carryover fish. That's sometimes carryover fish are great. You can stock those into a lake with northern pike and they're going to live because they're big enough. They're not going to get eaten. But to put in the numbers that we need winter kill, and that's changing.
But on the lower limit, Brad, that's still stewing. We're waiting for this administrative law judge hearing. Yes. That, I mean, could that still be in place by opener 2027?
Well, that's still the goal, but honestly, it's so hard when you're dealing with legal things. You have to have a legal document called a sonar. We're almost there with that, but that needs to be all buttoned up. No, I really think it's a small, very proactive step. Again, we get blamed as a Department of Natural Resources for being reactive. I think we're being very proactive here. I think that's something that we can do. Every state around us has a lower daily limit. Ontario, many places it's 2. I think this is a small step. If we can leave some more fish in the water, I think that's a good thing.
I may have dropped that reactive word in my column one day and not too long ago, Brad, in regards to forward-facing sonar. Real quick, do you think agencies, maybe not Minnesota, but fish management agencies are going to have to address? It's really blown up. I mean, probably even since the last time you and I talked about it, everybody's using these things, it seems like now.
It is. And the early data we had said, well, maybe it's not as much of a game changer as some folks thought. But I tell you what, there's a reason that guides and really good fisher people are using this stuff, because it works. And this does get back to a bigger, almost an existential kind of conversation about what does fishing mean to you? And if it means utilizing that gear and enjoying that, good for you. That's fine. That's not for me. I'll be honest with you. It's not for me. I talked about sitting on the bank of the river or just finding a weed line with my flasher and throwing a jig worm. That's great. And as long as you can do that in a way that doesn't affect somebody else's experience, that's fine. But are there places where it shouldn't be used? We're going to look into that. Are there times maybe it shouldn't be used? Are there species it shouldn't be used on because it does affect the fishing? And maybe you're not keeping all those fish, but if you're not careful, if you're fishing crappies in 30 feet of water and you're throwing them back and you think you're doing a favor, you're not, because you're killing most of those fish.
We're out of time here, Brad. One last little question. Are you going to miss going to Governor's Fishing Openers?
You know, those are fun because nobody, honestly, at those things, nobody asks the hard questions.
Right.
And you get to talk to small town radio folks, some of those folks who that really, it's a celebration. It's about what we have. It's people really understanding that Minnesota really does have the best fishing, and we have the best staff too. And that's not just me saying that. Like I said, I do a lot of national work. I continually hear that. You guys are so lucky with the resource you have, the passionate anglers you have, and the staff that you have. And I'll walk away from this knowing that that is the God's honest truth.
And Brad, your replacement has not been named yet, correct?
No, I think there'll be interviews coming up perhaps this month. I'm staying as completely out of that as I can.
Sure, absolutely. But I just wanted to clarify that that's not in place.
Nope.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for spending all this time with me here today. Fun interview, fun catching up with you again. And thanks for a great career. You've been an excellent fishery section chief. You've been very accessible for a media person like me. You've been great about responding to our phone calls and being transparent with myself and my staff and our readership and all the anglers in Minnesota. So thanks for all you've done, and I hope you have a great retirement soaking night crawlers in the Root River.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And you know, that's the other thing we have is because people care about it, we have media that cover it. And we have, folks like your operation, the newspapers, the radio stations are, and they're fair. They can be tough, but they can be fair. And that, to me, having that press out there and getting the story out, whichever side of it you're on, is vital to all of us.
Thank you. Very well put. Well, good luck to you and your family in retirement, Brad.
Thanks, Rob. Good luck to your organization, too.
Brad Parsons, DNR Fisheries Chief. He's retiring this September. Congratulations to him on a great career. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring wetlands for nearly 90 years. From breeding grounds and migration routes to wintering areas across North America, we need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone. DU volunteers are the engine that raises the funds to make conservation happen, selling tickets, securing donations, and finding sponsors. If you've got the passion, we've got a role for you. Visit ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Elevate your tactical readiness with the Rite USA lineup, where precision meets performance. Build your skills with the RXP-22 handgun and the RA-15-22 rifle and pistol. When the mission demands full power reliability, turn to the 724 Patrol. Powered by Rite's patented Inertia Plus system, this combat-proven 12-gauge shotgun offers ultra-fast cycling, total modularity, and optics-ready performance. Experience the full tactical edge at RiteUSA.com.
Hey everyone, it's Melissa Bachman from Winchester Deadly Passion, and I'm excited to invite you to my Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. This year, I'm going to be making 10 stops across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. Join me for a seminar packed with proven deer hunting tactics like rattling, decoying, and even a live Q&A where you can ask anything. Every attendee will be entered to win an incredible prize package worth over $1,000. Visit melissabachman.com for tour dates, locations, and more details.
Great weather means it's time for kids to go out and play, but kids aren't the only ones outdoors. Ticks that spread Lyme disease and other infections are also active in the spring and summer. CDC reminds you and your children to wear insect repellent, bathe or shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check for ticks daily. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Teresa with you for one final segment here this week. I hope you like the content here. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our digital or print content that way, or swing out to Game Fair this weekend or next weekend. If you subscribe at Game Fair, you get a free cap with your subscription. That same offer holds for the State Fair, where we've got a booth right behind the DNR stage. So lots of opportunity to meet the staff face-to-face. Tim Lesmeister here to help me wrap up this week's broadcast. Tim, thanks for joining me. I hope August is treating you and your family well. We were talking a little off here also, sharp-tailed grouse. Some not-so-good news with sharpies, huh? I had Charlotte Roy on a few weeks ago. I can't remember if we talked about sharpies. But Wisconsin over there where you're at, they've completely shut down their season again, huh? What did they do? They shut it down. Then it was open for several years. And now this year, even though they've got a few, they're like, yeah, we're still keeping it closed.
It's all about habitat. So if we had sharp-tailed habitat, then we'd have more sharp-tailed grouse. And if you shut down the hunting season, that means you're going to sell fewer licenses and you're not going to have any money to put towards what? Habitat. So it doesn't make any sense what you're doing. What you need to do is you need to say, hey, you know what we need? We need a sharp tail tag and we need to sell it for, I don't know, $25-$30. And you need to give some incentive to somebody that actually kills one. You only need to have maybe a 2 sharp tail limit. And you say, okay, anybody that kills a sharp tail and brings us the wing, here's a gift certificate to one of the big sporting goods stores for, you know, $100 or whatever. And then you could be generating a ton of money so that you can start developing some habitat for these sharp-tailed grouse. I think it was somewhere out west when the bighorn sheep were having some difficulty maintaining their population, they decided to sell some tags for an exorbitant amount of money, and people bought them. And they went out and harvested some animals, but they were also able to take an incredible amount of money and use it to expand the habitat for these beautiful, beautiful animals. And now there's a lot more of them out there, and the hunting season is wide open. So it just seems to me that if you want more animals, you got to have a hunting season, and you got to give these guys some incentive to spend some money so that you can take it and dump it right back in to expanding the population.
I just think the fatal flaw in your argument, though, Tim, is, I mean, you know, they auction off those bighorn sheep tags for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, right?
And more than that.
Yeah. I mean, you get a huge chunk of change for a single bighorn sheep. I just don't think there's many people willing to spend much. You got to sell a lot of $25 sharptail grouse licenses to get enough money to really do much management work. So it literally is a little different animal. You know, we spend a lot of time, you and I both, we agree on this. We spend a lot of time on the habitat equation, you know, demanding that we do more for habitat and lamenting what's happening, across the ag region and what that means for prairie grouse habitat and pheasant habitat. That's not quite the issue when you're talking sharptails, right? Because I think the problem with sharptails is aging forests, right? It's not necessarily development or intense industrial or agricultural use. It's the fact that these brushland areas where sharptails thrive, you know, they're kind of like this in-between species, right? You got your boreal forest grouse, the spruces. You got your young traditional grouse, the rough grouse that grows in aspen forests and open forests where we have logging. That's probably why they're the most successful. Then you got this brushland species that kind of exists in this zone between the forests and the prairies where you traditionally had prairie chickens and now we've got ringneck pheasants. That brushland habitat is disappearing, I think, mostly because of aging forests, isn't it?
Exactly. That is one of the big problems that we have is they don't let these individuals come in and clear cut anymore. You know, I mean, it's all this selective harvest on this wood. So these woods never actually ever get, you know, basically slashed. And that's been tough on some of the bird populations. It truly has. And even, you know, it's funny because people lament these burns that we got going on up in Canada and up on the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. And I'll be honest with you, when that stuff burns out, I'm telling you, the grouse population, it just screams. The moose do extremely well. The bear love it. And sometimes I think to myself, you know, I don't really like the smoke, but I do like the results.
Yeah, these are areas that evolved with fire. I was talking to Timo Rova about that a little bit recently. And it does bode well for some of these species like moose and rough grouse. We've seen that in other parts of the upper Midwest too, like the upper peninsula over there. Sini, that area. You know, there is a sharp-tailed grouse society. There's a group that dedicate, they do a lot of volunteer work. They try to manage for brushlands. You know, as we started this conversation out, the season in Wisconsin is completely closed. We do have two different zones here in Minnesota, kind of western Minnesota, and then that east central zone for sharptails. That east central zone is also closed here in Minnesota. That's, you know, the area that's adjacent to Wisconsin. The birds are struggling. And, you know, one idea I have, Tim, is how about we push the grouse slam where, you know, you shoot each different species of grouse, spruce grouse, rough grouse, sharptail grouse, prairie chicken, even sage grouse. If we really advocated for the grouse slam the way we have for some of these other species like the sheep slam or the turkey slam, maybe that would make people a little more invested in these native grouse and we'd see some more habitat work on their behalf.
That'd be great incentive. We'd have to figure out some way of rewarding these individuals that actually get there. Wow. Bragging rights probably isn't enough. We need more.
For a grouse slam, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Tim, thanks for spending a couple segments with me here again today. We'll get back in the saddle next week. Hope you and your family enjoy these mildly cooler days of August after that ragingly hot July.
Yeah, it's been beautiful. I'm having a great time being outdoors.
All right, Tim, take care.
See ya.
Tim Lesmeister, appreciate him, as well as Brad Parsons, who were our main guests here on this week's show. I hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Driesline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.